Yes, we're learning Daf Nun Hey Maseches Ksubos. However, we are going to start from about five lines from the bottom on Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, the beginning of the sugya, and then we're going to go through Daf Nun Hey. So the Gemara, there is two dots right after the Mishnah. The Mishnah, of course, told us the basics that for an almana, you have for a basula gets $200 ksuba, and a mana gets $100 ksuba, and there is a concept of Tosefes ksuba, that you could add on, and you could add on as much as you'd like to the ksuba. So the Gemara right away is medayik. It says in Reitz of the Hoysif, the Mishnah's words are, if you want to add, you could add. So the Gemara picks up on the way the Mishnah phrases it. It's Reitz of lichtoiv lo loikatani. It doesn't say if you want to write to her and give her a present, you could write whatever number you want. Ela Reitz of lahoysif. If you want, you could add. Now, adding, especially if you have a legal mind, adding means that there is something that already exists, and you're adding on to that thing that exists, which is the whole point over here. So when you add on extra money into the ksuba, it's not a different concept. It's not something else. It's part of the ksuba itself. And that's exactly what the Gemara is picking up on. The Gemara says, Masayale the Rav Evoi, Amr Rav Yanai. This is a proof to what Rav Eboy always taught us in the name of Rav Yanai. Amr Rav Eboy, Amr Rav Yanai. Tanai ksuba ki ksuba domi. The extra conditions that either Chazal or you add to the ksuba are part and same as the ksuba itself. And the Gemara very nicely clarifies for us what exactly is the significance of being part of the ksuba. Nafkamina. The nafkamina is whether it's part of the ksuba or it's independent from the ksuba. Is, and the Gemara now is going to give us like 10 examples. L'maycheres, l'maycheles. How many?
15.
I didn't count.
14.
Okay, l'maycheres and l'maycheles. Okay, the first example is if she sells the ksuba. So you know, a lot of times you can get into a fight. Was this included in the sale? Was this not included in the sale? The answer is the tosefes, the extra amount that you added into the ksuba, is absolutely included in the sale. That's if you gave it to somebody else. And similarly, l'maycheles, if she's meichel the ksuba, and says, you don't have to pay me the ksuba. So what is the ksuba? The ksuba includes even the extras that you added on. That also she gave up. Now the meredes. Meredes is in the case where you have a wife who is not behaving. No, it's not off the derech. That's not something else. Meredes is that she is not doing wifely things. Right, she's not doing what she... No, she's on strike. Right, she's not doing what a wife is supposed to do. For example, she's not agreeing to live with the husband. She's not those things that the husband is not meichel. She's not washing his hands and feet the way she's supposed to, if the husband is not meichel. So that's a meiredes. She's going against him. She's going against him. So the halacha is that as a meiredes for every week, we'll see the Gemara later is going to tell us, every week that she's married, she loses a certain amount from her ksuba. And that amount is reduced until, of course, you get to zero. So getting to zero includes getting to zero on the tosefes as well. The pagemes. Pagemes is if a woman collects any part of her ksuba, and then, so normally the halacha is if she comes into Beis Din and says, hey, I'd like to, my husband died, I would like to collect my ksuba. So if she says, and she walks in, Beis Din's going to believe her, they're going to give her. Now, she doesn't necessarily have to take the full amount all at once. Let's say she takes a portion of it. The halacha is the next time she walks into Beis Din and says, I only received a portion, so then Beis Din will make her swear to collect the balance. So pagemes includes even if all she received was a portion of the tosefes. It doesn't matter whether it's the tosefes and vice versa, it all works on the tosefes. It's all part of the ksuba. She could be mechelas whatever she wants. That was the second example. I don't know, we had a tevas. The tevas is at some point she has the right to be teveya her ksuba. This is the same idea that if she comes to collect the ksuba, that it is a, it's collecting, once she starts collecting her ksuba, she no longer is entitled to receive from the estate. Because normally after the husband dies, the wife can live on the estate as long as she stays there without a problem. The moment she says, you know what, I'd rather just collect my ksuba and move on, then she no longer has the right to live off the estate. The chiddush of this Gemara is, even if all she asked for was the extra, I'm not even asking for the ksuba, I'm just asking for that extra little bit, that extra little bit is already considered being taiveya the ksuba, and she loses the automatic mezoinis. Lo iveris al das is what you were saying before. Iveris al das is if she goes off the derech. That's what she does. So there the halacha is that it's an automatic, she loses everything. She goes off the derech, she loses her ksuba entirely. Yep. Even if And therefore she loses the Tosefes also. Lishvach. Lishvach means, just literally translated, is you have a piece of property. That piece of property is worth, whatever, $100,000. Now, you could enhance it. You could take a vacant piece of property and build a house on it. Now, that land itself, with the house on it, is now worth $1 million. The land itself went up in value. So the halacha is that you do not collect from the shvach after that occurred, after the husband died. So if at the moment the husband died, the property was worth $100,000, the yisoimim went ahead and built something fancy on it, so now the land itself went up in value. Or, even better, the price of the neighborhood went up in value. But the point was, on day one it had a set value, on the day he died it had a value, and then it became more valuable. She does not have a right to collect that more value. Okay, so
that's the
land. And the same applies to the 200 part of the ksuba and also the Tosefes. She has no right to collect the value of the Tosefes from that enhanced value of the property. Now, so the way the Talmid Rabbeinu Yoni explained, and for whatever reason, that's how I understood the Gemara, even though it's not the Pashtos, the way they understood it is as follows. Let's say there wasn't enough money to pay her ksuba. Let's say her ksuba, the guy promised her $1 million. Okay? So the property was only worth $100,000. And now that it's enhanced, it's worth $1 million. So she's only gonna collect $100,000. Even though now, with the improvements, it's gonna be worth more, she's not gonna be entitled to collect more, because on the day he died, it did not have that value. She'll get $100,000 worth of that property, and not the additional $900,000, even though under her ksuba she's entitled to get that full amount. Okay?
What's the land?
So what Rashi is saying is like this. Let's say you have a bechor. Let's say there are five sons. Very simple. $100,000 property. The bechor gets pishnayim. So instead of dividing the property by five, let's use a simpler example. There are four sons. That'll make the math easier. There's four sons. So theoretically, if they each took the exact portion, they would each get 25%, they would each get 25,000. No problem. But there's a Bechor. The Bechor deserves twice as much. So they're really Ke'ilu five sons. The way you look at a Bechor is he's counted as two sons. So each would get $20,000. Now that's fine if they're divvying up the property in five ways instead of four ways. Let's say the property again was worth $100,000 today, but it's worth $1 million by the time they do the dividing up. The Bechor does not get Pishnayim. He does not get two-fifths, or whatever his Pishnayim is, in a million. He only gets the two-fifths in the hundred, on the day the father died. Okay, that's the example. So Rashi's showing the same way.
You don't probe me for 10 years.
Right, you look at everything of the value on the day that the husband or father died. In the same way, by Bechor, the Bechorim doesn't get Pishnayim on anything enhanced, improved. The same thing she too also does not get, both with respect to the ksuba and with respect to the Tosefes ksuba. She doesn't partake in any of that enhanced value the moment the husband dies. The next thing is l'shvua, that if there's ever a scenario, and Rashi goes through the few cases that there's a scenario where she has to swear in order to be able to collect her ksuba, in all of those situations she has to swear, the same way she has to swear to get the base ksuba, she also has to swear to get the extra part of the ksuba. Rashi does ask a question which is worth mentioning. I thought Pygamus also was an example of when she has to swear. So Rashi asks, why do you need this case separately? So the answer Rashi gives is because if it didn't say Pygamus separately, we would have thought we wouldn't have realized that you could be poigim on the Tosefes also. That's what the Chiddush, in other words, the fact that you have to swear, you're right, we would have picked it up over here. But the fact that you can come into Beis Din and say, I already received some of the extra. I never received any part of the base, but I received part of the extra. That also triggers the fact that she's considered having received a portion of the ksuba. So we needed that to be listed separately, not because it's not a swearing chiddush. The chiddush is that the Tosefes is also considered having collected. Ulishvias. And the Tosefes works, this is actually one that is in her favor, which, as we know, under normal circumstances, a contract on Shvias is wiped away. After Shvias, you don't have to pay back your chovos, your obligations. However, a ksuba, because of Chazal, does not get wiped out in Shvias, and the same thing is true also for the Tosefes, does not get wiped out. Ligvois minakarka. So this is an interesting example. Here is a scenario where the father on his deathbed, it doesn't have to be on his deathbed, but theoretically, on his deathbed, goes away and says, hey, okay, I know what, here's all my property, I have five different properties, and he goes ahead and he gives away all his properties to his various children, to his son. And included over there, he also says to the wife, I'm going to give you the address over here. You get address number one, you get address number two. And he ends up giving her a property also among the children. But the property that he gives her is worth a lot less than the value of her ksuba. The halacha is that if she keeps quiet and she doesn't make a macha and she accepts that division while he's, and it has to be a scenario where he gave away everything. Right, so basically when a person writes a will, for example, writes a will, he gives away all the property, and he gives the wife a piece, and she accepts that piece, then that's considered collection in full. And again, the same thing is true about the Tosefos. Also, even if it doesn't match up, she loses whatever she didn't, whatever value is missing from that division. Umenaziburis, now we know the halacha is that a ksuba, the pashtus is that a ksuba is collected from karka. So the type of karka, let's say he has multiple different pieces of land. He has good value, he has on Fifth Avenue, and then he has in Newark. You know, so he has good and he has bad. So she gets menaziburis, so she gets the last. She gets the lowest value type of property. The Tosefos also only gets to collect from that lower value. The kolzman shehiba beis aviha. Also, she only, the ksuba runs as long as she's in her father's house, only for 25 years. So here's the distinction, in case you didn't pick up on it. The halacha is that when the husband dies, the wife is allowed to stay on his property forever. As long as she stays on the property, she doesn't say anything, she could stay there forever. If she ever moves out, let's say for whatever reason, like we had last week, that there was no room in the house, so she had to move out into another house, and she goes back and she lives someplace else. But she never demands that she collect her ksuba, so there's a statute of limitations over here, is 25 years. She has up to 25 years to the day to ask and demand that she collect her ksuba. She doesn't lose her ksuba for 25 years. Day 25 and one day, she loses her ksuba. Okay, she has to make the demand within 25 years. If she's not living in the husband, if she's living on the estate, she could stay there forever, and she could demand it in 30 years. But she leaves, the clock starts 25 years after he dies. If she's not, yes, 25 years from the day he dies, if she's not living on the estate.
If she's in 26 years, she's still in the father's house, she gets to continue, right?
Yes, if she's living in the estate, she's living on the estate, she could live there forever. There's no clock. The statute of limitation only starts if, no, 25 years after, 25 years applies, yeah, I think so. I think that's what it is. Well, Rashi just says 25 years. It doesn't say 25 years from when. But it's, my understanding is 25 years from when he died. Then the last example is of Alichta Benin Dichrin. Luxubas Benin Dichrin. And anything that has to do with Benin Dichrin, as we saw earlier, that means that the husband promises her that any children that you have from me, any sons that you have from me, have a right to Yarshin your Ksuba, and they get a disproportionate amount. That applies also to the Tosefos, applies to the Benin Dichrin also, that they get the whatever he promised her, the base and also the extra, goes to these children. Okay, so those are the 14 examples of the nafkamina between, there's no nafkamina, whether it's part of the ksuba or it's not part of the ksuba. Itmar. Ksubas Benin Dichrin. So now we just discussed the idea of ksubas benin dichrin. Ksubas benin dichrin means, again, the fact that her children get to yarshin her ksuba. Even though really midaraisa, so the husband already yarshin did, and it becomes part of his property and all his yarshin collect equally, any children that she had get a disproportionate amount, they collect her ksuba. Okay, so now, Pumpadusai Amri, the people who lived in Pumpadusa used to say, loy tarfa mi mishabdeh. They do not collect from Meshubadim, meaning if the husband had property that could have covered that value, but he already gave it away to somebody else, the Yisoyimim do not have a right to collect it once it was given it away. Why? Because Yar Soin Tanan. Because the words that you write for Benin Dichrin is Yar Soin. If you, the words that you write are, it says, Benin Dichrin Diyahavi Lichi Minoy Inon Yar Soin Kesat Ksubasech. The Yarshin, the word Yarshin. And the rule is that Yerusha never collects from Meshubadim. Whatever the father gave away during his lifetime is not part of his estate, and they don't yarshin. So the same thing over here also, the benin dichrin don't yarshin, don't collect the ksubas benin dichrin from any portion that the father gave away while he was alive. Yarshin, we look at them on the day that the father died. So if on the day the father died that property was not in his estate, then the fact that it comes into the estate later is not part of the calculation. What happens later, we'll deal with later. However, b'nei Masa Mechasya Amri, Tarfim and Meshabdi, they say it does, you do collect from a Shabbatim, Yasvoin Tan. That we switch out the word Yasvoin and we put in the word Yasvoin. Yasvoin is more like a Baal Choyv. A Baal Choyv does collect from a Shabbatim. What does that mean? That means, let's say, for example, a father, he lent money to one guy, but he also borrowed money from somebody else. So he owes another person money. So eventually, the estate, or the father, let's say, let's talk about the regular case, eventually the father will collect from his borrower, but then his lender is going to collect that money. Okay? So that's, and he will collect. Now, what happens if the father died, and that property that he, the money that he lent eventually gets paid later, after the father died? The Baal Choyv still has the right to collect it when it comes into the estate. So the same thing the Gemara wants to say is that we view the Benin Dichrin like a Baal Choyv. They're owed money. They're a lender. And since they're a lender, they'll be able to collect properties even that come later, even though it's coming after the day the father died. Now, if you consider them Yorshim, then we look at it literally on the day that he died. If we look at them as Baal Choyv, then it could even come later. That's the Nafka Mina. And therefore, the Gemara Paskins... Let me just finish. I'll tell you one second. The Hilchos Aloy Tarfim Mimshabdi Yar Soin Tanan. And we look at them as Yorshim, and we do not get to collect Benin Dichrin from property that comes later. The Gemara says, Metaltalin, the Isnu Ba'inai. Let's say the father, the husband actually, promised that he was going to give certain metaltalin. As we said before, typically a ksuba is collected from karka. But let's say the father decided to promise certain metaltalin as part of the ksuba. So we only look at those metaltalin if they're here, beinah, they exist on the day. Beloy shvua, you can even collect them without a shvua. Meaning, he promised, I'm going to give you the diamond ring. The diamond ring is in the vault. No problem. Whoops. No problem. She can collect that without a shvua. Less no ba'anayu. Let's say they're not here for whatever reason. He lent it to somebody else, or it's just not here. So now it's a machlekes. Pumpadizoi Amri and Pumpadizo. They said beloy shvua. You could collect that also, and I'll explain in a moment. But in Masa Mechasya Amri b'shvua, they say you have to swear. The hilchos of beloy shvua, and we pass me. You don't have to swear. Now, what's the significance? What do you mean you have to swear? You don't have to swear. Again, let's use this example that he promised her a diamond ring. He said, "This if I die, you get this diamond ring. No problem." And let's say right before he died, his sister was making a chasana, so he gave his sister the diamond ring to wear for the chasana, and he died. So now it's not in his rishus. She has that diamond ring. So, are we choishish? And now the wife says, hey, I want my ksuba, and I was promised this diamond ring as payment for my ksuba. Does she have to swear? So what's the machlekes? The machlekes is, are we choishish that she already collected her ksuba from someplace else? If we have no suspicion whatsoever, then we're comfortable allowing her to say, I want that diamond ring, and she gets that metaltalin, she gets that object. However, if there's any suspicion, and B'nai Mechasya hold that there's a suspicion, well, if the diamond ring is not here, she probably got something else instead, then there's a suspicion that she already collected her ksuba. Once we suspect that she collected her ksuba, then, like we learned earlier, pagemes, even though she isn't actually pagemes, but we're afraid she might have collected already, so then we're going to make her swear. We allow her to swear. She swears she didn't get it, we'll trust her. But we're going to force her to swear, we're going to make her promise that she has not collected any other collateral, and then she gets to collect these metaltalin as well. Okay, that's talking about metaltalin. Now, what about Yichud La'ara, Ba'arba Mitzharonu? Let's say he designated a specific piece of land for her to take as her ksuba. He says, if I die, this property is yours. Now, he didn't just say this property. This is actually a machlokes rishonim. Let's stick to the simple pshat in the Gemara. Simple pshat in the Gemara. See, and he gave her the meets and bounds of the property. He literally said from the east to the west, to the north to the south, said that's the property. Yeah, that's the property. Then for sure, below shvuah, she gets to collect without a shvuah. Collects without making a shvuah, and it's not necessary for her to make a shvuah, because why? The same idea that we said before. Since we are confident, we know that since she knows she's going to get this piece of land, there's no reason to suspect that she would have taken any money from anywhere else, because she knows what it is. She knows what's going to happen. He dies, I get this land. There's no question, so she can just take it without swearing. She just has to say, I get to collect it. However, b'chad mitzra, let's say he didn't really define carefully which piece of land. He just gave her a vague idea. He set one boundary. So again, this is where the Machlokes Rishonim is. What does the Gemara mean exactly with one boundary? What did he mean, a specific piece of land, or is it unclear which piece of land that he gave? But let's just say he set one boundary, so it's not clear which piece, how big, or whatever. So now, the question is, did she rely on that piece of land or not? Because it wasn't clear to her what she was getting. If it was clear to her, she's satisfied. But the moment it's not clear to her, she might say, well, I don't know if that's going to be good enough. I think I'll collect from something else. Now that we have a suspicion that she collected from someplace else, so this is the machlekes, pumpidisoi, amri, in pumpidiso, they say, below shvua, they still can collect, she still collects. Because at the end of the day, even though she wasn't clear, if she decides to go for this land, then that means she decided to go for that land and she didn't take something else, so she doesn't have to swear. B'nei Masi Mechasya Amri B'Shvua, and B'nei Mechasya says she does have to swear because we do suspect there might be something else that she took, and therefore V'Hilchasa B'Loi Shvua, but L'maisa, if she decides to go for that land, then we are satisfied that she meant to take only that land and not something else. Okay, next case. Omer Le'edim, this is a whole new thing really. Omer Le'edim Kisvu V'Chasmu V'Havu Le'i. And he says, okay, now the husband says, this is what I plan to give to my wife as a ksuba. He says, give it to her. He actually uses those words. This is what I plan to give. Go ahead and give that land to her. So, konamine, loitzarecham luchebe. If they made a kinyan, if he actually did a maisa kinyan, a kinyan suda, kinyan chalipin, exactly, he made a maisa kinyan, loitzarecham luchebe, they don't have to ask him again. Because then it became very clear that that's what he meant to go through with it, and you could write it down, and the whole thing becomes a final deal. You don't have to ask him any more questions. Loikonamine, but if let's say he didn't make a kinyan. He just said, he made an announcement, this is what I plan on doing, but he didn't finalize it. So, they say, you don't have to ask him again because that's close enough to finish. Since he did say give it to her, we assume that that's what he meant. He meant to go ahead and finish the deal. However, they say in the city of Mechasio, you have to ask him because since he didn't finish his sentence, there's always the suspicion maybe he didn't really mean to go follow through with it. However, this is interesting. Here you have to ask. This is the first time we actually paskin like the Masa Mechasya. Here we do suspect. Because if you mean to finish it, you mean to finish it. The fact that he didn't complete the deal, it's still open. You know, it's like, we have this all the time. You have contracts. They said, yeah, we agree to the contract. Until you get back that signature page, until you get it, you know, fully executed, there's always, whatever. We never really signed. We never really finished. The same thing over here. He didn't make the kinyan. We can't really know that he meant to finish it. Okay, that's the end of that. Sugya, about, again, the concept over here was, what does she rely on? Does she completely rely on what I promised? Or does we suspect that maybe there was something else, either the husband didn't mean it completely, or maybe she said, I'm not relying on this, and she went for a different piece of collateral. That's the end of that Sugya. Now the Gemara quotes Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. That's a quote from our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, this idea that you could promise a Tosefes. We all know, again, you start with the base, there's 200 suz for a ksuba, for a basula, 100 for an almana, that's the base. I'm going to call that the base ksuba. Then the guy promised another $1 million. He promised some huge, huge amount. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah has a chiddush in our Mishnah which says that extra amount that he promised is only collectible, is only enforceable if they actually get married. If they never actually get married, even if he promised it during the engagement, and then something happens, either he died or they get divorced during the engagement, he never really meant to enforce it to be final during the engagement. He only meant if, this is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says in the Mishnah, only if they end up getting married. Once they get married, then it becomes final, then he becomes obligated in the full amount. Okay. So, Amarav, Virav Nosan, it's two people. Chad Omer Halochik Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Chad Omer Ein Halochik Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It's a machlekes between them. We don't know who says what. One of them says we do paskin like this. The other one says we don't paskin like this. Do they actually have to get married, or the moment he promised it, even during engagement, he's obligated. So the Gemara says, "Tistaim de Rav Nosson Huda Omar Halacha Rav Elazar ben Azariah." But I can prove to you, since we didn't know originally who said what, I can prove to you that following other things, other announcements, other halachas that Rav Nosson said, that Rav Nosson is the one who probably holds like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Why? The Shamina Leila Rav Nosson, because we heard in other places that Rav Nosson said to also Basar Umdana, that we look at the big, we figure it out, we assess what the guy really meant. So, over here also, we assess that he didn't mean to make these promises if they didn't get married. He only meant to do it if they get married. Now, where else do we see that we look at the big picture, we look at the assessment? To Omer Rabbi Nosson, because Rabbi Nosson told us, Halacha k'Rav Shimon Shazuri b'Mesukin. We paskin like Rav Shimon Shazuri b'Mesukin, the case is like this. If a person who is about to go on a trip, so this is what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says that if a person is about to go on a trip and he says, write a get to my wife, before he gets on the boat. So the halacha is that not only do we write the get, we also give it. Even though he didn't finish the sentence, he never said, and give it to her, he just said, write it, because we understand that he was torud, that he was busy, and his mind wasn't into it, so he forgot to finish his sentence. Okay, that's what the Tanakhama says. Rav Shimon Shazuri adds on, also if you have a person who is deathly ill, who also says, write a get for my wife, maybe to save for Yibum purposes or for whatever. He says, write a get. Even though, again, he didn't finish his sentence, we understand that the reason why he would be saying this is because he means to give it. But he didn't actually say it. So that's the chiddush. And the fact that Rav Nosson paskins, like Rav Shimon Shazuri, that we do look at the picture and we assess what he really meant, that means we paskin in general, Rav Nosson paskins in general, that we look at an umdano, we look at what the guy really meant, not only what he said. If we can interpret what he said to what he means, then we look at the big picture. Now, the other thing that that's the proof that we need. The Gemara happens to finish off on the top now, the next words on the top of Memhayim Abayis. The Gemara says he also paskins in a separate halacha that has nothing to do with our sugya, but these are the two things that he said together. So we're going to quote them together. But the proof we already have. We already have the proof from the umdan of the fact that by Masukin, a guy who's sick, we give the get, even though he didn't actually say the words, give the get. But the second halacha, that just to finish the sentence, says, Ubetrumas Meiser Shel Demai. In Trumas Meiser Demai, we also paskin like Rav Shimon Shazuri, which says as follows, a completely random halacha. The halacha is that if you buy Demai, what is demai? Demai is you buy food from somebody who you don't trust took Trumas and Meisters properly. So when you take it home, you do the Trumas and Meisters yourself. Mi suffik. It's not a din d'oraisa, it's a suffik. Now, the problem is you gave the Meister to the Levi. A Levi is then chayiv to then take off 10% and give that 10% to the kohen. That's the regular, that's the normal procedure. Even on a daraisa, even if you're talking about regular food, you'd have to first give meiser, and then you take trumas meiser. So then, but what happened was, this Levi was a klotz, and he took off his 10%, and then he tripped, and he dumped the 10% of the truma, which belongs to the kohen, and only a kohen is allowed to eat it. He dumped the truma back into the pot. So now it's all mished together again. It's all mixed. Now, the problem is that now that you have truma mixed in, anybody who eats truma is chayiv misa. Now, if we were talking about truma d'araisa, that would be for sure chayiv misa. There's nothing you can do about it. The only person who could eat it is a kohen, because you don't know which apple is truma, which apple is not truma, so only a kohen could eat it. Here we happen to be talking about demai, which means that it wasn't really chayiv truma mid'araisa in the first place, because it could be that he claims that he already, you know, it could be that he took trumas and meisers. So you're only doing it misafik. So since it's a suffik, and if I had to sell this whole vat to the kohen, I would lose a ton of money. So we allow you, because only a kohen could eat it. So I'd have to sell it to a kohen. And it's not only selling it to a kohen could eat it. So it could only be eaten by a kohen. So it's a much smaller value. It's not that it has to be owned by a kohen and the kohen can sell it. The kohen has to literally eat it. So there's a very small market for that. In any event, so since this is demai, it's only a suffix in the first place, so we have a special exception to the rule is we allow you to go back to the original seller who you weren't, you didn't trust, and you ask him, by the way, did you take, tell me the truth. Did you actually take my trumas or my sus or not? And if the guy tells you, yes, I did, we believe him, and we don't require that you sell the whole thing to the kohen. It says apachol because over there, the first half of the Mishnah was saying even on Shabbos we would trust him. So because as Tosfos actually, the Tosfos over there says that we trust in Am Haaretz, we trust in Am Haaretz on Shabbos, meaning even though they might not take trumas and maaseros, however Shabbos they won't lie on Shabbos. So on Shabbos, if he tells you I took Shumas or Maestros, or maybe he'll tell you he didn't, but if he tells you that he did, we can actually believe him, and therefore, okay, but that's the other halacha. For our purposes, what the halacha that we're talking about is that, again, our case is that you mixed it together. So this, even during the weekday, you could ask the Am Haaretz whether he took it, and if he says that he did take Shumas or Maestros, that's enough to save you. Obviously, if he tells you, well, honestly, I didn't take Shumas or Maestros, then you do have your mix of demai over here, and truma mixed in, and you're going to have to sell it to a kohen. There's nothing you can do about it because he's telling you that this is real truma. Okay. Anyway, fine. So we see the point is again. This halacha is not. This is just the second halacha that Rav Shimon Shazuri says. That's not really the emphasis of our Gemara. Our Gemara really was focused on the first halacha that Rav Masukin that we see we follow umdino. Is that at this point of the Gemara? We've now remember we started off Rav and Rav Nosson. One of them paskins like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, so it seems at this point in the Gemara that Rav Nosson must be the one who paskins like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, because the same way in the case of Masukin, Rav Nosson says we look at Umdino, we assess the situation. So too, Rav Elazar ben Azariah also says we assess the situation that he doesn't want to promise what if they don't get married. However, the Gemara now, again, we're still on the first line of the top of Nun Hema Beis. The Gemara says, "Rav lo yosav asu umdino." So you're telling me that Rav doesn't? I agree with the concept of umdino, that we look at the bigger picture. I'm going to prove to you that Rav also, in a different situation, follows the concept of umdino. So this is all again nothing to do with ksubis. This is another halacha where we have to look at the big picture and assess what did the guy mean, what did the guy want. So we learned like this. For Idmar, we learned like this. Matnas shchiv meira shekosav ba kinyan. Okay, here we have a problem. A shchiv meira means somebody who knows he's going to die, or is deathly ill. So he thinks he's going to die. So there's our special halachas that when we have somebody who's so sick that they're going to die, we have to treat them with a tremendous sensitivity, and we want to make them feel good because we don't want to do anything that's going to accelerate his death. So if he believes that there's a problem, so we're concerned that that's going to make him anxious, exaggerate his disease. So there's a special halacha that by shchiv meira you don't have to make your typical kinyan. All you have to do is say it. If a shchiv meira, if a guy who's about to die says, "I want to give this to somebody," it's as if it's already given. Kiksivu masira dami, his word is everything. Normally, a regular healthy person has to write a kinyan and do acts of kinyan and this and that. A shchiv meira does not have to do that. Now, there are special rules that apply to a shchiv meira that don't apply to a bari. This is one of them. The other thing that's also very interesting about a shchiv meira is that if it turns out that tomorrow they come up with a cure to his disease and the guy walks away and he's alive, so then we say, especially if he gave away all his property, then the halacha is he can retract. He says, well, I was giving it away because I thought I was going to die. So, but now that I'm alive and I'm going to live for the next 20 years, I have to live on something. He's able to take back all those things that he gave away. That's a unique special halacha by shchiv meira. Again, it does not apply to a bari. A bari means a healthy person. Healthy person gives it away. It's away. It's done. He gave it away. The kinyan is chal. So here you have a situation where you have a guy who's dying, and he gives away matnas shchiv meira, but instead of using the processes which were put in place for a deathly person, he decides to use the healthiest system. So now he's confusing everybody. Are you doing this as a sick person, or are you doing this as a healthy person? Because it has nafkaminas and halacha. Which one? So which one is really your situation? So there's a machlekes. Bebei Rav, Mishmei de Rav. So in the yeshiva of Rav, they quoted Rav as Amri. They would say like this: Arkava Atrei Rechshi. He's riding on two animals. He's getting the benefit of both of them. Now it's interesting because when we say he is getting the benefit, who's the he? Who's he who's receiving the benefit? This is a little bit confusing until you see Rashi. Rashi says the he that's receiving the benefit is the recipient, not the Shchiv Meira, not the guy who wrote this. The guy who's receiving it is able to say, well, I guess if he wrote a Kinyan, then it works like a Bari and he can't retract. So he's getting the benefit. And also, there's also a special halacha. Normally the halacha is like this. If I am a lender, and let's say I am a verbal lender, I don't have paper. I lent you a dollar, and you agree that you owe me the dollar. So halacha is that I cannot transfer that loan to somebody else. Because it's only mealy, there's no paper over here. There's no way to actually do it. Can't do b'chalipin. Doesn't work, I cannot. A shchiv meira has a unique power that because he's going to die, so the estate has to get the money. So if the Shchiv Meira decides, you know what, I want Reuven to be able to collect my loans for me, so then the halacha is that it works. Only by Shchiv Meira. So that's what we mean. So that halacha, so on the one hand, the recipient is able to say two things. He says, first of all, he wrote a Kinyan, so he's like a Bari, so he can't retract. Even if he gets healthy, I still get it. And also, if he hands me over his loans, that only applies to a Shchiv Meira, so then I also get the loans. So he gets both. He gets the loans, and the guy can't retract. So he gets, that's what Trei Rechshi means, he gets two advantages. Ushmul Omer, that's Rav Shita. And that's, by the way, Rav is the one we're going to focus on. Ushmul Omer, lo yodana ma idin bo. I don't know what to do with this guy, because I don't know. Did he mean to be a Shchiv Meira? Did he mean to be a Bari? I don't know which one he really wanted, and each one has nafkaminas, and it could be we just messed everything up and he doesn't get anything. Okay. So the Gemara says, Bebei Rav Mishmeida Rav Amri Arkava Trei Rechshi. So the Gemara now explains. In the yeshiva of Rav, they said, Rav says he gets both advantages. What does that mean? Harehi Kematnas Bari, Vaharehi Kematnas Shchiv Meira. He gets a little of this. There are the advantages of being Bari, healthy, that the sale is final, and there's also Shchiv Meira that a loan can go through. As the Gemara itself says, Harehi Kematnas Bari, he's like a Bari, he's like a healthy person, Shem Omar, any Yachal Achzabai, that even if he gets better, he stands up, he gets better, he can't retract. And Harei Kematnas Shchiv Meira on the other, so that's the advantage of being a healthy person, the healthy Kinyan. And he's like a Shchiv Meira, Shem Omar, Halvoasi Leploini, Havoasi Leploini. If he says, I want to give my loan to this guy, the loan goes
without a Kinyan.
Or without something that a healthy person couldn't make a Kinyan on. It's not transferable. It's not transferable for a healthy person. But as a sick person, it is transferable. So he gets both advantages. Okay, so now, by the way, why do we say this? The point that the Gemara is making is now we see that Rav is looking for an umdina. Because this is an assessment. It's not what, because what he says is unclear. So we have to interpret, we have to insert our interpretation of what he meant when he did this. So once again, now Rav is the guy who's using the concept of umdina. He's inserting what he thinks the guy meant in order to make it happen. Okay, so we see now both Rav and Rav Nosson are both following the umdina concept. Now, just to finish, because we do have a machlekes Rav and Shmuel that we're talking about, and Shmuel Omer lo yadana ma idin bo. Shmuel says, I don't know what to do with this guy. Why? Because Shemer lo yigomer lahaknoisei ala b'shak. Because maybe he really meant that the star should be the kinyan, because he wrote in the star and make a kinyan. And the problem is v'ein shtar l'achamisa. The problem is you can't give a kinyan, you can't make a kinyan after the guy died. In order to make a kinyan, you need two participants. You need the makna and the koina. You need the guy who gives and the guy who takes. And if it's all happening after he dead, the guy who gives is no longer here. So Shmuel says, you're stuck, you get nothing. Anyway, that's the machlekes Rav and Shmuel. But the point that our Gemara is focused on, the point that we're going to focus on, is the notion that we see also Rav agrees to the concept of umdino. So both Rav and Rav Nosson both agree to the umdino. So now, I no longer know which one is following Rabbi Elazar, Paskins like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and which one doesn't follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. I don't know, because they both now fit into the concept of Umdin, at least in certain scenarios. So we're just going to learn, even though the Gemara is really going to continue, we're just going to learn the first three lines, four lines on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. And we'll stop over here, because this is where the Gemara concludes the question that we're dealing with. Again, the Gemara is going to continue on the sugya, but for our purposes, we're going to just read the first four lines. So the Gemara says, "Ela tarvayu ozli basar umdino." Yes, it's true. As you have proven, both Rav and Rav Nosson, they both agree with the concept of umdino, which is why we didn't know which one said which. We didn't know which one was the Rebbe Elazar who paskin like Rebbe Elazar and which one didn't, because they both could fit the bill. So what are they arguing? But clearly they're arguing. We just don't know who said what. So we're just going to say, one said this, one said that. Manda Omar Halacha Shaper. So obviously the one who says we paskin like Rebbe Elazar and Azariah clearly is applying the concept of umdino, that he only meant to give her the money if they actually get married. If they didn't get married, they didn't get married. However, Manda Omar Ein Halacha, so how do you explain the one that says, I agree with the concept of umdino, so why don't you paskin like Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah? Meaning that you would obligate him to pay even during engagement. Okay? Why would you say that? So the Gemara says, Hachanami umdin daitahu. There is an umdino on that side also. The Chachamim also say there's an umdino. Why? Mishum akruve daitahu. Because the reason why is, I want to make her happy. I want to make my fiance happy. And I made my fiance happy. So in other words, what was it my goal here? Was my goal to get married? Which obviously it was, but was my goal limited to if I get married? Or was my goal because I want to be happy? I wanna make a situation over here. And I made a situation. So since I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, that's also an umdino. So I cannot paskin like Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, because I feel that that's what I assessed the situation. I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, which is to get engaged and make her happy. And I did that. By giving her a big present and promising her lots and lots of money, I made her happy. Even though we never got married, I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and therefore my chiyuv is a real chiyuv, and it's intact. And I am going to, the engaged, the fiance is going to be chayev to pay. Okay, we'll stop over here.